This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, and with Sky Bet EFL playoff games coming thick and fast over the current 7-day period. It's almost impossible to make a podcast without it being out of date almost as soon as we've recorded it. So normal service will be resumed next week when we'll look ahead to the playoff finals, including the most lucrative game in world football, the Sky Bet Championship final. In the meantime, we're going to concentrate in this episode on three of the best stories from the regular season that's just concluded, one from each division, and all underlining the diverse range of characters across the EFL. All of them on this week's episode of the official EFL podcast. Wickham Wanderers were billed as one of the Sky Bet Championship's greatest ever underdogs. They lost their first seven games and even their manager for a couple of games when a prolapsed disc detached and went into his spinal cord. With six of their 11 wins coming in their last 11 games and ending the season just a point from safety, it does suggest that had they had just a few more matches, this interview with Gareth Ainsworth might have been very, very different. Gaz, do you look back and is there any one moment where you think, oh, if only that had gone slightly differently, we might have had a couple more points and this situation could be very different. I mean, you know, human nature, what it is. Do you think like that?
Absolutely. Me and 91 other managers, Clem, yeah, without a doubt, we all look back and think that could have been different, that one point, that 2 points, and especially the teams at the bottom of the league that have needed to survive, you know, 1 point or 2 points, it'd be with our goal difference. So, of course, I look back, the team that finished just above us, Derby County, we played them at home and we had a goal disallowed, Daryl Horgan. It was his first league goal of the season. It was a quick free kick, Clem, and he was 5 yards onside and the linesman was still looking at the incident of the free kick, and it was taken that quickly that he missed it. And by the time he looked up, Daryl was 10 yards offside because he broke the trap and everything and went on to score. It was given offside, and I'm thinking, that would have been them 2 points less, one point more for us. That would have done it. But there's not just that game. There's the Swansea were 2-0 up at the end there and conceding late on. Jason McCarthy slips and handballs it in the box. But every manager will be saying these. But I've always said after 46 games, you will deserve to be where you deserve to be. And we can talk about refs, we can talk about decisions, but I've always given my best there. Whatever team I pick, whatever tactics I employed, I would not go back and change him because that's me. I gave my best and it just came up short. I'm pretty sure that everyone listening to this will be going, do you know what? Fair play. We didn't think you'd be that close. We thought you'd be relegated by about February, March time. And no R next to Wickham's name until the last whistle of the last day. And I'm proud of that, even though we are going down. We have been relegated as it stands. But I'm proud. It's crazy to say. Really proud. The efforts were great and just gutted the fans couldn't see Championship football. My job to get them back now.
Yeah. As the coach left the Riverside,
yeah,
and you're heading off and the season is over and there is that R name against you, I mean, what kind of emotions were flooding over you? What was the chatter on the coach? And obviously, what as well have been your emotions and have they changed much over the 10 days since the end of the season?
Yeah, the Cardiff game was the one, Clem. We'd lost at Cardiff 2 weeks before that. And that was then the mathematical one. You know, we were then 6 points behind, I think, Derby County and Sheffield Wednesday. We knew we were playing Derby on the last day. And we knew that we needed to score about 17 goals in the next two games to have any chance of staying up. So that was the game. If I'm honest, the next game at home to Bournemouth, I mean, fantastic occasion, 1-0 beating them. And then going up to the Riverside, and sorry to say to you, but we beat him 3-0.
I've let you have that one. And me and Stevie Crossman, who's also a Borough fan, were on Five Live at the time. And not once did we break rap. We let you have that one, mate. We let you have that. Well, we like you that much.
It was a great moment during the game, Clem. We went 2-0 up after about 25 minutes and I shouted onto the pitch, only 10 more, boys, only 10 more. And Neil Warnock looked at me like I was some sort of crazy guy. And it was a great moment. But coming on from the Riverside, honestly, it was quite excited for next season. We'd just taken Middlesbrough, and again, I'm sorry to bring it up, but we'd just taken Middlesbrough, really, to the cleaners on that game. We were Bolasie and Watmore and some good players, you know, McNair and I thought, you know what? We are so different to the team that started the championship. We are so different. And we're going into a division that we've been trying to get in for 20 years, by the way. Never mind coming down out of the championship. So I'm so excited. And if I'm honest, the mood has been one of reflection, but not in a bad way. Not in a, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd done that. People can do that. You know, I'm pretty different. And I will always go, I did that and I gave my best. I thought that was the best I could have done. Yeah, maybe that might have been wrong. But we learned so much, and we started slow and we finished like a train. Some teams started like a train and finished like a walking pace. And that must be an issue to them, thinking, wow, well, there's something gone wrong. Everything went right for us throughout the season, and we've slowly built. And it was, like you say, one more game, I think we'd have done it. But unfortunately, we are now recruiting for a bounce-back season next year in League One, and that's exactly what I intend to do.
Was there ever a point where you thought you were getting dangerously close to hitting the wall, where maybe managerial positivity and mentality wouldn't be enough, and that gap in resources was insurmountable?
Yeah, after 7 defeats on the spin in the championship, it was, wow, this level is something else. You know, I've been, I saw the conference to League 2, the League 2 to League 1. Those levels, they're bridgeable gaps. They really are. But once you go from League 1 to the championship, I think the finance that has been building up over so many years has made this gap huge. I really do. It's a huge gap. You've got Premier League players in this league. Some of them could play in the Premier League. They're not doing it. And that Premier League, wow, that's another stratosphere, but in a whole different way. You know, look at the three teams that may get promoted this year. You know, Watford have got to go straight back up. Obviously, Norwich could be Bournemouth. That'd be all three of them back up. And I think that says that the finance and the parachute payments and all that really counts. But League One to the Championship, huge step. And I actually thought after 7 games, wow, maybe people are right. Maybe people are saying Wickham don't deserve to be here, and there's no place for a team like Wickham, and they're going to get battered every week. And so questioned it, but the first point came in the next game against Watford, and we should have won that game. We killed the corner straight in. The referee disallowed it for some unknown reason. And that started us then on that. That one point was all we needed for that tiny bit of belief to go, we do belong here. And it was against Watford as well, just come down from the Premier League. And it was like, yes, we can compete. It's just finding a way. And we went on to a little run then, and then after Christmas. So I got a couple of big injuries back. Uchi Pizu, who's been outstanding, that no one's ever put any faith in him, and he comes and rips the championship up and destroys centre-halves at times. Taffazzoli coming back. And really a way of playing that, a confidence, a mental side, so huge. So, yeah, there was a time when I just thought, wow, even my chairman might not stick with me after this. But he kept ringing me up, kept saying, I'm right behind you. Keep going. We know what we are. And so, yeah, it was quickly sort of gone. But there was a moment where I thought, oh, hell, this is tough.
Have you made a rod for your own backs? Will it be possible to do this again? In everybody's perceptions, Wickham Wanderers will have moved up half a division in where they see them as being cited. League One next year is going to be a ginormous league. There's no doubt about it.
Incredible, isn't it? Look at the teams in there. You know, some of the rumours that the spending from these owners at Sunderland and Ipswich and people like that, it is going to be a huge, huge league. But what you've said there is Wickham Wanderers are now being talked about as a League One club. We never had that. We've never had that. We've always been a League Two club. We've always been this Wickham Wanderers, this fantastic cup run. How did they ever do that? This Martin O'Neill days. Now they've been respected as this League One outfit that maybe, just maybe, we could bounce back to the championship. Wow, Wickham could. You know, they've been there once. They know the rule. They've got a few good results. That just being talked about like that is massive success for me, Clem. And so rod for me on back, I think comes with the territory. It comes with success, doesn't it? And I'll have to handle that rod the best I can. But ironically, I probably needed a few rods put in my back at the start of the season with that injury I got. So.
Well, quite. Are you okay, by the way, physically? Have you had any after effects of that?
All good.
All good.
No, do you know what? I'm better than when I played. I used to have a bloody stiff back when I played, and now I'm better than when I ever played. So my ankle's still a mess, but the back, yep, really good, Clem. So I'll be taking you on a one-on-one soon, whenever you want it.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that. Warning, here comes a really tough question. What would it take to tempt Gareth Ainsworth away from Wycombe Wanderers?
Not the toughest question, believe me. I always put it down to one answer. I'll give you one word, and it'd be why. And I really mean this, and I'll explain that. People have said to me, you've done your stripes now, you've done 9 years at Wycombe, it's time for you to move on. And I'll say, why? Because we've been on a steady upward curve the whole time. So why? Why would you leave that? Secondly, I've built everything. I'm in charge of everything. Everyone trusts me, and everyone will support me at Wycombe Wanderers. So again, why? Why would I leave? And then thirdly, my driver is experiences. My driver is people. My driver is family. My driver isn't money. Don't take that in the wrong way, because everyone's isn't. It would have to be one hell of a life-changing thing for me to go, right, we have to go. Otherwise, is it the right thing to do? You know, I'm Preston, we're rumoured, that's my first ever professional club. Obviously, QPR have always been, Mark's done a brilliant job, and there's no way that there's going to be any changes there at the moment, but that's always in the pipeline as well. So, you know, there's little reasons there, but why would you just move? Because it looks like that's what you should do. That's what all managers do. I'm not all managers. I'm not proud not to be all manager. Look at this hair. This isn't going anywhere soon, you know. So it's a really important thing to. There's managers have been gone and had two and three jobs since I've been in charge at Wycombe, and they've been sacked, and now they haven't got a job. Now, fair play. That's what they wanted to do, and that was their choice. But I'm thinking, I'm happy. I'm safe. I'm secure. Why? Why would I move? You know, it's got to be really good reasons for me to move, and they haven't really come yet. You know, there's been one or two moves potential and have to turn down, but no, really happy. And like I say, my job now is bounce back and to get back to the Championship with Wycombe Wanderers would be a bigger achievement than getting there in the first place.
Within current restrictions, and obviously we're gradually unlocking, what are the top three personal things away from football you are going to do to recharge your batteries over the next few weeks, couple of months? Keep it clean, please.
A trip to Blackburn is definitely going to be one, and not many people will say that, believe me, especially with Blackburn in the news the way it is at the moment. So I'm sure we'll be keeping the masks on, because there's a hot spot up there.
To see family.
Family, Clem, family. Mum and dad, haven't seen for well over a year now. You know, I've seen them. I saw them at Blackburn, actually, when we played Blackburn, and we got battered 5-0. So it wasn't a great end to the day. But I saw them from 50 yards away. They're in the director's box. They were invited into that game. And since then, it's been FaceTime, phone calls. So the kids need to go and see their grandparents. I need to go and see mum and dad, even at 48 years old. Still want a hug from my mum. And that's going to recharge me without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay, that's number one.
Music, obviously, you know, I know you're a huge music man yourself. We've had some good shows together, aren't we, on the radios and things. But music's going to be big for me. It's always been in me. It's something that anyone listening to this now, go and put your favorite song on and try and keep that smile off your face. It's an unbelievable medium, is music. And so at the moment that the Cold-Blooded Hearts are recording an album, we're getting all the songs done. We're getting all the tracks recorded. I've got something, just a little project I'm doing with Petr Cech and somebody that's coming out quite soon. I can't say any more, but watch this space. That'd be fantastic. So music, yeah, writing songs, playing songs, singing. The gigs can start again towards the end of this year. The NXS tribute band, all this stuff again. Wow, I'm getting excited talking about it. Never mind doing it, Clem. So that's number two.
Yeah, and number three.
Number three is probably. Do you know what? I'll leave number three to saying that the fans coming back next season is something I'm so excited about. I really am excited about. I wake up every single morning. I've said this to you before. I wake up and honestly, I look at myself and I go, you lucky get. Okay, I've got to keep it clean. You lucky get, Gareth. You are a football manager. You've played football all your life. And what have you got to mourn about? You're going in to inspire people, to work with people on football and a game you love. And the fans are going to be back next year and they're going to be right behind you. And they're going to be so excited to see the team, to see you scoring. How lucky are you? You know, never, ever take anything for granted. That's what keeps me going, you know. I really do, honestly. I'm so lucky. I work hard, but a lot of people do and they don't get as lucky as me. So, yeah, knowing I'm fortunate is still keeping me positive.
Love it. Number three is counting your blessings. You've stolen my word that I was going to use. Thanks for inspiring us this season, Gareth.
No, I absolutely loved it. Every single minute. And thanks for the support everyone's given Wycombe Wanderers. And if you've played the tiniest part in our story, thank you, because it's not finished yet. And in the words of Arnold Schwarzenegger, we'll be back.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
One of the highlights of the season in Sky Bet League One was Wimbledon's name returning to Plough Lane after a 30-year absence. When the club was reformed in 2002 in the ninth tier of English football and initial player trials were held on Wimbledon Common, only the most dedicated supporter could have foreseen the five promotions that were to follow in the next 9 years to bring them into the Football League, let alone another to take the club to their current level and a return to SW17. But one of them was Eric Samuelson, who quit his role as a partner with City giant PwC to take on the job of first finance director and then chief executive at the club for a nominal salary of £1 a year. He's just released his version of events in a new book. Altogether now, the extraordinary story of AFC Wimbledon. And my first question is a strange one, Eric. Did you ever, at any point, regret your personal choices? Because I would assume that's a lot of sacrifice, a lot of earning potential that could have swelled the Samuelson family coffers, and instead all that amazing energy went into building the club as we know it now.
No, I didn't. I'd got to the stage in my career at PwC where there's an optimum time to retire probably, and I was close to it. And I got bored, I think. There comes a time when it's time to move on. My wife and I live a fairly frugal life, honestly. We weren't wealthy. Certainly, we were less affluent than we were when I started this, although I was paid significantly more than you said. I was paid a guinea a year.
Oh, a guinea. A guinea
a year.
Well,
I had a good agent. They got an extra 5%. It sounded better than £1, didn't it? I never regretted it. Never. I was, with no disrespect intended to PwC, I was glad to be away.
I mean, just how much did the club consume you over all those years at the coalface?
Well, for the first 13 months, I was actually working at PwC. Well, I was sitting there, probably working on club matters, and I formally retired, and I promised my wife at the time that I wouldn't, A, give up all my time to the club, and B, spend my pension on it. And I lied about the first one. The second one, I still got my pension. We're fine. But it depends on whether you count travelling to an away game and a Saturday's work or not. But if you count that, there'd be some work 7 days a week, on a normal weekday, probably 8:30 till 7:30. A weekend, probably 3 or 4 hours on a Sunday, plus the joy of travelling to some outlying place and losing and driving home miserable. So that was the downside of the week. But when you love what you're doing, which I did, as did I think pretty well everybody there, then it doesn't feel like work, does it?
When you think of what the club have achieved so far, where they are now, what sort of word or phrase comes into your mind?
I think probably resilience, closely followed by community. One of the points about the book is that, and you know us better than many, a small number of people become the public face of the club. Me, Ivor Heller in particular, one or two others. And what I wanted to do is make it clear that actually there's probably a couple of hundred people made significant contributions to where we ended in the where we ended up at Plough Lane, as we are now. So the community bit was particularly important. It was also essential that we got that message out there because it helped us win over people on the Merton Council. So there's that, but there's also resilience. You know, there's some. If it hadn't been, sadly, I can't claim I was one of the four founders, but Trevor Williams, Mark Jones, Chris Stewart, Ivor Heller. There's a bit in the film Network where he says something like, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And for me, that was their network moment. And if they hadn't done that, there wouldn't be a stadium. There wouldn't be all those jobs. The people working there might have a job, but it wouldn't be there. And we probably wouldn't have even a team. So everything stemmed from those four people saying, that's it, we're just not going to put up with it anymore. And that resilience, that we're not having it, I think is a fundamental of the club.
Eric, I wonder if there's a fine line in the case of AFC Wimbledon between hustle and being aggravating so-and-sos.
Well, I wonder in what particular context you're thinking that, because... One of the best moments I had at the club was when the Combined Counties, the Seagrave Haulage Combined Counties League as well, when we joined them. When we got into the Football League, they had a special event to commemorate being the first of their clubs to do so. They invited us back, and I honestly think that the warmth towards us, Chris Stewart had stood down by then, but he was the man in charge when we were in that league. So I asked him to come back and collect the presentation. I think the warmth we got from that suggests that we didn't make a lot of enemies and we didn't ruffle too many feathers, except perhaps with the regulatory bodies, where I suppose you could say we probably upset a few of them now and then.
Yeah, I meant it as a compliment, actually. I think it would take a hell of a lot of hustle and probably not being afraid to ruffle a few feathers to have taken the club from where they were in 2002 to where they've got to now. I mean, it's one of the great modern football stories. Was there ever a moment when something went badly wrong and you thought you might fail?
Looking forward in the early years, I'd set a 5-year plan for how often we get promotion or whatever. And I couldn't see at the time how on earth we could get out of the Football Conference, as it was then called, and I'm afraid I still call it that. It's called the National League now, I think, isn't it?
It is.
Into the Football League. I just couldn't see how we could do it. You know, and when we got there, we were in with, I think it's 13 other clubs who either were Football League clubs or were about to be. And no disrespect to everybody else we played, but I thought, blimey, this is real. These are proper clubs we're playing. But we'd appointed a brilliant manager in Terry Brown, and with a very young team and a low budget, he played football and got us into the Football League. But that was one that, when I was looking forward, rather, you know, when I got there, when we got to the playoff final, I thought, I was sure we were going to win. Despite the fact I present myself as a cautious, boring accountant, I'm an optimist deep down. I genuinely am an optimist, and I'm also prepared to be a risk taker. I think the other time when I was really hit hard was when Mayor Johnson, now the Prime Minister, called in our planning application. And for people who don't know what that means, it's basically our local council had given us, in principle, the permission to build a new stadium, and the Mayor of London had decided that he was going to take over, deciding whether that permission should stand or not. And against the advice of his own officials, he decided that he was going to do that. It was a strange thing to do because he knew that 2 or 3 months later he was going to stand down. He wasn't standing for re-election, but he did it, and he probably cost us the best part of £1 million. It's difficult to be certain, but with delays, having to stop work, inflation. And I think when I got that phone call late one evening, I thought, yeah, I was probably as down as I ever got.
And called on all those reserves of resilience. Conversely, can you give me your proudest moment? You can take just one away and you can sit there and look at this and it makes you warm and fuzzy for the rest of your life. What would that one moment be?
Is yet to come. When the teams come out for our first ever competitive league match, at the new stadium, and the place is full, as it surely will be. I was listening to an interview with Bill Nye the other day, and to paraphrase what he said, I'm not great at pride, but I'm quite good at relief. And I think, but that moment then, I hope that everybody there will just stop for a moment and think, blimey, is this what we really did? And a lot of the people in that stadium will be able to think, I'm one of the we, which makes it even better. Yeah. So that's the key moment, because we've completed the circle. We've got back into the league. We've got into the third tier. We've built a new stadium. And now for the first time, with a sellout crowd, all COVID and everything permitting, we're playing a league game. That will be quite a moment, I think.
Thanks for sharing your wonderful story, Eric.
My pleasure.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Let's head into Sky Bet League Two. Although in the case of Cambridge United, not for long, because after confirming their promotion next season, they'll be back in the third tier for the first time since 2002. It's been quite a journey since then for both the club and their manager, Mark Bonner. And this is a really weird place to start, Mark, but as a local, as somebody that's had a long association with the club, do you remember that relegation from, I'm calling it the third tier because I can't for the life of me remember what the division was called at that time. Do you remember it? And obviously within 3 years, the relegation to the National League was completed.
I do actually, yeah. I was a season ticket holder at the time. So the last time I was a season ticket holder was the year we got promoted back to League One as it is now. And then as a local lad, I remember the relegation. And actually then those subsequent 3 years, I was working in the club in the community scheme and starting in the what was centre of excellence then when we lost our place in the Football League. So, it's a mad full circle to have gone round and to have obviously been a season ticket holder watching us the last time we got to this level, to then be the man on the touchline that's been there when we've done it again is a bit of a crazy story. I'm aware of that, but it's a big achievement for all of us.
Yeah, well, it certainly is. But I mean, you know, obviously my profession loves stories like yours because you are a local. You have worked your way through the club. Do you mind just, I know you must have done this 100 times. Do you mind just briefly sharing with us? Because no professional career at all as a player. Did you play a little bit? Schools, county, anything like that? Or were you just not a player at all?
Yeah, no, all of those levels, but no real highlights to talk of from a playing point of view. And I was always drawn to coaching, really, whether that was leading things in school or taking local teams or whatever. As soon as I left school at 16, I sort of felt that was it for education, formal education for me, and I wanted to get out of that. And some opportunities in coaching came up at the club in the community scheme at the time. So that's where I started and tried to get involved in volunteering and doing bits in the academy as a really young age. And probably the club's sort of situation at the time of going into administration and really struggling in what's League Two now opened up doors for me that maybe I wouldn't have had. And I sort of dived straight into that and got lots of really good coaching opportunities. And when we shut the youth system here in 2005, I moved to Southend United to work in the academy there and was there for 7 years working throughout the age groups and every age group really in the academy up to under 18s. And then moved back here in 2011. So it's now basically 10 years. And since I've been back, I've worked with every age group and spent a lot of time taking the under 18s as academy manager and then more recently as first team coach and assistant manager under a number of different managers before having the chance to take the team on two occasions as caretaker. Obviously, the latter one then becoming permanent in March of last year.
Is the fact that you are manager, is your managerial career by design, by accident, or by taking your opportunities?
Well, I think definitely by taking opportunities, because I've certainly probably always done a job I've been told I was quite young to be doing. I understand that's by definition the way it is. And for someone that's quite young, I've had quite a bit of coaching and leadership experience, not necessarily in first team level, but across the age groups and working and managing with different members of staff and things throughout that whole academy experience. I'd like to say there's an element of design. You know, people like the LMA, the FA, put in some brilliant education opportunities for young coaches. And my development through that pathway has probably been accelerated. The opportunity here came along a lot sooner than I thought it might, but it was always something I wanted to work towards. So that there's probably an element of it where the last year and actually achieving the job and then not taking the official game for 6 months because of the pandemic is funny, but in a kind of way, it was probably the right person at the right time in the right moment. So yeah, definitely a bit of design in there, but probably came around earlier than ever. And the area of, you know, you can always wait, but when you get offered opportunities that you think are there, I think sometimes you just got to grab them and see how it goes.
And does a non-professional player have to fight that little bit harder for opportunities on the coaching ladder?
Well, I don't know. From my own perspective, I'm not so sure. I've had some really good openings that have come my way here. You certainly always, it's rare, isn't it? There's less people that have played than have, and understandably so as well, because I'll never be able to have the experiences that many others have had. So you're always going to miss out on those experiences that you can pass on to people. But in the end, I think a few things. Number one, it's about managing people and the empathy that you show them. You have to show that you can connect with people and understand them, regardless of different experiences and backgrounds that we've had. And most importantly for me is the skills and experiences that I have got, I need to make sure I use them. And I surround myself with people that have got the skills and experiences I haven't got and can't ever have. And with the team that we've put together here, I think we've done that well to make sure that there is a nice balance across the whole of the staff.
I mean, listen, I think, you know, my questions are genuine. I mean, I love it because, and I know I threw you a curveball because you came on Five Live a couple of hours or an hour after you'd got promoted. And I asked you about your own career path, which might have been an unusual question in hindsight under the circumstances. But it rather begs the question, how many more are out there waiting for an opportunity and that you don't have to have played at a professional level to bring something different to the table, as you have proved and as a couple of other quite high profiles have proved, maybe lower league footballers. You know, Mourinho obviously played very minor league, didn't he? Did Arsene Wenger play at a reasonably low level as well, I think?
You're probably right. I'm sure there's lots of talented people out there looking for opportunities, like there are lots of talented people in jobs and lots of talented experienced people trying to get into jobs. There isn't many jobs for the number of people that are out there, and there's an awful lot of skills and experience out there that clubs can benefit from.
Yeah, and I guess on the positive side, you have had the experience of observing rather than having to put time and energy into training, playing and stuff. You could observe quite intently, and also you're using words like educator and leader, and those are things that don't necessarily flow straight out of playing the game into being the leader and controller of men or women.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, we've got Gary Waddock's the assistant manager here, and he's got bags and bags of experience and has been outstanding for me and for us. Barry Corr is recently retired as a player and has begun that coaching journey at the end of his playing career. So some people start that a little bit earlier. And I think lots of the skills from player to coach to manager are transferable. There's a lot of things that do cross over from one to the other. But you're right in the fact that I haven't had those years of experience. My whole time's been around coaching, leading, organising and managing programmes or people. And I guess I've tried to continue that as the way forward. The vast difference is the added pressure and the fact that, you know, in academy football, you don't do it in the spotlight, and all of a sudden the spotlight is on you in this one. And that's been a little bit dimmer this year in some respects because there hasn't been stadiums full of people and supporters. But nonetheless, there's certainly a huge difference there. And but we've always had a work ethic here, and I've always had one where you want to get your hands dirty and do what you got to do to learn the tricks of the trade to survive in it. I'm under no illusions that this year has been an outstanding one for us, and for it to be my first year doing the job, the industry isn't as giving and as good as this. You know, I'm sort of stood taking some plaudits for it, but there's a heck of a lot of people that have put towards it, and ultimately the players have delivered on it. And we've had some individuals that have had outstanding seasons and a team that have really outperformed where we were expected to be.
If you had to pick a sentence to describe why you have had this outstanding season, what would it be? I'm not giving you any options on X, Y, or Z. I'm saying, what is the nub of Cambridge United and why 2020-21 has been such an outstanding season?
Talented players and talented people that have worked together, really clear what we were trying to achieve, and have reacted outstandingly well to all of the challenges that we've had to overcome. That, in a nutshell, is what it's been for us this year.
And you laid down a mantra right at the start, did you? You're a very good sort of communicator in saying, this is our directive. This is the key objective we're heading towards. So nobody was in any doubt.
Whether I'm a key communicator and a good one or not, we'll have to be in the players and staff would have to comment on that. I wouldn't want to say that of myself. I think we didn't put any big statements around where we wanted to try and finish and achieve. We talked about being competitive. We talked about improvement in the last few years. And there were a couple of things that we made really, really clear. We wanted to create a team that our supporters connected with and understood and saw as a real Cambridge United team and a top team for this club. We wanted to create an environment that players loved being in, loved coming to work and enjoyed their job. Fundamentally, they were the two main things, the drivers of how we connected with people and the supporters and the fact that we created something that people were proud to be part of and enjoyed coming to work every day. And then we had to be competitive. We had to improve. And I think in League Two, you go into a season, the way the season is, you've always got a chance of the playoffs. And that was something that we had in our minds. And as the season progressed, it became clear that that was possible. And then only towards the end did it become clear that maybe a position in the top three was there for us. And we managed to get over the line, which is fantastic for us.
It really is. I mean, there were a couple of anxious weekends in the run-up to finally doing it. How did you deal with that situation? Because inevitably, human nature and all that, I guess there would be some that would thrive on that situation and others that might think, oh, God, I hope we're not going to blow it. And also, what did you do with the dressing room? Dealing with them as individuals, collectively? How did you manage them through those couple of little blips before you got over the line?
Well, you're not wrong. First of all, it was certainly an anxious end to the season. We knew with three games to go that probably a point would be enough for us to get across the line. And we weren't able to get a positive result against Stevenage or against Harrogate in a crazy game up there on a Friday night. And so it led us into the last week knowing that we needed a positive result to get across the line. And there was 8 days between the games. So that's the longest run-in ever to a game. So you know, there's no doubt there was a nervousness and an anxiety of the what ifs. I think that's really human to go to that place. But in the end, you try and lean back on the experiences that you've had. Over the previous two bad results, we responded fairly well. We've done that well this year. We've won a lot of games after we've lost, and it wasn't to be in the Stevenage Harrogate week, but we managed to do it between Harrogate and Grimsby. And I think in terms of leading everybody, you lean on the experience of your staff and your players that have been in similar situations before. Yes, dealing with individuals massively in that sense, but also trying to make the week as normal as possible and keep the noise as quiet as possible and the focus just on the game. Much easier said than done because everyone knows what's at stake, but we wanted to make sure by the time we got to Saturday, 3 o'clock, we had some energy left and we hadn't drained ourselves thinking and talking and worrying about it all week. And that was probably the focus that sent us into a game. And we managed to put in a solid enough performance to get the result we needed.
Give us a little personal insight from when the final whistle went, you're over the line, to now when we're talking to you, what, 10, 11 days after you've achieved it. What sort of emotions have washed over you? And then what have you been doing bricks and mortar wise towards next season?
Oh, look, a whole host of emotions. I think I was only looking through the pictures yesterday of all the events after the game, and I'm hardly in any of them. So people won't believe I was actually part of it. The players tend to enjoy themselves. I think you get pulled pillar to post on all sorts of media duties and things, which is obvious and fine. But yeah, I missed out on a few of the highlights, but we certainly had a good afternoon and evening, and rightly so. Fantastic emotions at full time because of the way the season ended, there was real relief in the end. But in a funny way, the fact that we did it last day and we did it at home in front of the owner who'd come across from America, I think that those things made it even more special in a way. And we were able to spend the evening together and the weekend together and really enjoy it. And rightly so, because it's been a really tough and challenging year. So, yeah, always relief, I think, in management when you win games, which is sad, really, but true. And yeah, some real joy in there as well. And you can't take these moments for granted. It may never happen again. And if it does, you never know how long you've got to wait for it. So we try to enjoy that moment. And I want the players and the supporters to enjoy that for a little bit as well. But if we want to repeat success, we're going to have to put that one to bed quite quickly and move on and try and improve, knowing that success next year will look different to success this year. That's fine, but we've got to get our heads on that. But it's not the right time for fans and players yet. They should carry on enjoying it for a little bit. From myself and Ben Strang, head of football's point of view, it's busy meeting players and planning pre-season and trying to recruit some players to the squad to make us as competitive as we can be next season.
You mentioned the owners. I mean, significant US shareholder investment. Big ambitions? They got big plans? Do they see a lot of potential still in Cambridge United?
Well, I certainly don't think we've reached our full potential yet. And whether that means league positions and things like that, yes. But also in terms of the impact we can have in a city, how we can develop our own players and improve our academy, how we can improve the facilities, how we can develop our training ground. I think it's really important as a club like ours that, yes, we continually invest in the team and try to make our team stronger so that we have highlights like we had this year. But I think when you're custodians of a football club like we are, we have to develop the club. And for me, whenever my time's up here, I'd love to be able to look back and think we've made quite a big progress in certain areas. And of course, on the pitch this year we have, but off the pitch, there's been lots of things we've improved. And this gives us an opportunity to do that again this summer with some of the work that we're going to be doing around the place. So it's important that we try and run those two things parallel to each other. There's definite ambition for the club and the size in which we can grow the club. And we know that we've got to have a competitive team to do that. But we're certainly never going to be invest everything in the team and have a flailing infrastructure around us that actually doesn't support itself longer term. So we want to build something that's sustainable, but we are ambitious and we want to improve. What we do know is, you know, our resources this year were very low for the level that we've just got out of. But we're going to be pretty much a minnow in the level above compared to a lot. And that's fine, because hopefully the spirit and organisation that we've got will be enough for us to add some talented players to and try and compete.
Mark, just one final question. It's a sort of practical one. It's about rest and recuperation. I mean, obviously the country is still just coming out of lockdown. This would traditionally be a time when a lot of football people would get on an aeroplane and go and try and have 10, 14 days in the sunshine. The venues or the countries you can go to are obviously currently restricted. There'll be anxiety with certain players and families about travelling on aeroplanes. How are we going to make sure that next season isn't across football completely blighted by fatigue? Because obviously nobody got away last summer, or very few would have got away last summer as well. I mean, is it a consideration that you have got as to how you're going to get proper rest and stepping away from football into those players that are going to be with you next year?
Well, I think that's a really important point, actually, and people won't give players credit for that. And even next year in the Premier League, these players are going into a European Championships before they go into a new season. But no one will give them any credit for that. It's hard. It's no different to everybody in society. There's the normal fatigue at the end of a football season. But there's also been an element of COVID fatigue this year. You know, all year we've been telling people they can't do things. Life's been pretty boring, pretty monotonous, pretty mundane. So that's why I credit the players for how they've got through that. And I hope that next year, if we can get a bit more of a normal life outside of football, that will help re-energise people. Certainly a break now. But the biggest way we can re-energise people next year is get supporters in stadiums. Because to try and have to go through another year like this, I think is really, really tough. Damaging economically, but also just for the spirit of football. We need people there. And for our perspective, we'll be able to go into some stadiums next year that we could only have dreamt about at the beginning of this year. And hopefully that will give us a nice drive. But I think as the leader, you have to show a little bit of empathy towards people and understanding that that is a situation. But hopefully the break in itself will be enough to just refresh everybody. And although we haven't been able to get out of the country during that time, hopefully a freshness will come and an enthusiasm for a new season, certainly when there's such a new adventure ahead for us.
Mark, congratulations on your outstanding season. Lovely to talk to you. Well done.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for your support. Thanks, Clem.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Mark Bonner, Eric Samuelson and Gareth Ainsworth. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials if you'd like to get in touch. Our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.